This is the Gator Nation Football Podcast with your hosts, Alan Williams and James DeVirgilio.
This place is an insane asylum in the swamp! Oh my!
Now we know we're just a bunch of average stiffs.
Welcome to the Gator Nation Football Podcast, a post-Hurricane Irma edition. I'm your host, James DeVirgilio, alongside Alan Williams. Alan, you were in Russia. There was no hurricane for you. There was definitely a hurricane for me. How was the weekend watching the hurricane from afar?
Well, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I was definitely concerned for everybody back home, a lot of friends and family there in the state. But James, you're alive. You made it.
I made it. I was here in Gainesville. I rode out the storm. I never actually lost power, so that was a good thing. Most of my block was just fine. Drove around Gainesville today. Today's Monday, depending on when you listen to this show. Monday, as soon as the wind stopped, we drove around town for a while. And all in all, Gainesville seems to be in a pretty healthy state. There's some localized flooding. There are some trees down. But as far as things go, I think Gainesville in and of itself handled the storm quite well, which certainly is going to impact this weekend's game against Tennessee. And before we talk about how missing the Northern Colorado game impacted us, Alan, let's just talk about what we know about this weekend's game. Right now, the SEC office is working with both schools to determine when the game will be played, if it's going to remain at 3:30. I think as far as Gainesville is concerned, the game could absolutely remain here in Gainesville. I suppose the only question mark is what happens with the rest of the state and how do they feel about the state of Jacksonville and Orlando and Tampa and people traveling around. But as far as Gainesville is concerned, I think it would be entirely fine to host a football game here. I think the city will be more or less up and running, business as usual, for the most part by the weekend. But Alan, the question that I want to ask is, how does missing the Northern Colorado game impact the team coming into this Tennessee game, wherever it's played?
Well, after that showing against Michigan, and we talked last week, this team could have really used a game to work out some of the kinks, especially offensively. I mean, they didn't show much in that game in terms of like how they want to look the rest of the season. They needed more reps. I mean, we talked about Felipe Franks maybe playing almost the entire game against a team like Northern Colorado because he needed the practice. He needed the game reps. The offensive line needed snaps together, obviously. And so I think this is, you know, it's definitely detrimental to the team. I mean, the upside is that there are no injuries this week. Guys got to rest, get healthy. So that's a plus. But overall, I think this is a missed opportunity for this team. Unfortunately, the weather, again, takes away a game from the UF schedule. So I don't know. Mixed feelings about it. Obviously, you don't want to play a game that puts people in danger or diverts, you know, necessary resources. But in my opinion, this is a net negative for the team. What about you?
Definitely a net negative. It hurt to lose this game. We needed to go back on the field against a live opponent, even if it's an overmatched one like Northern Colorado. And we needed to get reps. The offense needed to get reps. This was a big loss for our football team. Our defense is young. You've got 10 new guys out there. They lost out on reps. You lost out on adding film to further improve. Most football teams improved the most between week one and week two. So this was a big loss. Add to the emotional stress that these guys have. A lot of these guys are from South Florida. You're sort of watching the hurricane the entire week. The whole state's on hold. You just lose a lot of growth in the game of football in and of itself, which certainly pales compared to a hurricane or anything else that's going on. But you know, there are consequences to these actions, and the consequence for us is to miss a game, is to miss a lot of reps coming off a good opponent. And that's a lot of times when you make the most improvement, is when you get exposed by an opponent. You see that on film, and then you get to go out and correct it against a new live opponent. So that hurts us. Tennessee had the opportunity to play their game over the weekend, and they got a chance coming off a Georgia Tech win to do that and further benefit themselves, and we did not. So I think it does impact this weekend's tilt. I think it will be interesting to see how we handle playing essentially two very difficult games in a row, which is something this program has not done in the modern era.
Okay, James, a lot of the buzz around the show last week was just how strong you came on when talking about the play calling and the coaches, specifically our offensive coordinator, Doug Nussmeier. As you've gotten a little distance from that game, Do you still feel the same way? Do you still feel as sharply as you did last week when we recorded?
I feel just as sharply, if not maybe even a bit more sharply. I spent the rest of that week reading articles and kind of seeing what the narrative looked like for other publications, for other analysts. And it seemed like there was some groundswell that built where there are plenty of informed people who are hanging this on Nussmeier, much like I am, and McElwain as well. I'm not absolving him of responsibility, but on the coaching in general with regards to play calling. And the other half seems to be pretty strongly against the offensive line, which is not a narrative, of course, I subscribe to. So I wanted to sort of take this moment as an opportunity to discuss play calling in general. It's something that I've talked about a lot on this very podcast. In fact, I talked about it last season after we collapsed against Tennessee. So we will dive into it quite a bit on this episode. But I want to talk about it at a broad level. So what makes a good play caller? What am I saying when I'm talking about the fact that I don't think Nussmeier understands how to call plays? Well, very simply, in football, and it's likened a lot to like a chess match, but let's just even make it a more simple game like tic-tac-toe. If you put an X on the board in tic-tac-toe and your opponent puts an O on the board, there's an optimal place for you to then place your next X. In fact, tic-tac-toe is a game that if you go first, you can never lose. You can only tie if your opponent, aside from you, is playing optimal. So if you didn't know that, congratulations, you learned some tic-tac-toe strategy. But that dictates there's certain moves you should always make. And those moves are dependent upon what the person who is playing second does. Well, play calling in football is not all that different from tic-tac-toe. It's more complicated, but it's very simple. Essentially, the offensive coordinator decides what formation he wants, what play he wants to call, and then he's going to look at the defense and how they are aligned, what kind of personnel they have, what kind of play they're probably calling. And then you make your decision. Do I stick with this play or do I change this play? Very good play callers have a knack for understanding what the defensive coordinator is going to call and then putting their offense in a situation to succeed against that defensive front. Nussmeier continually does the opposite of this. The defense will tip their hand, will telegraph exactly what they are doing. Hey, we're going to load up to stop you running the ball. We're going to bring extra defenders inside the box. So they're going to be within 7 yards of the line of scrimmage. And we're going to tell you, we're not going to let you run. And then Nussmeier, in all of his infinite wisdom, simply runs the ball on most occasions. And to add injury to insult or insult to injury, he does similar predictable things on certain downs. So we run the ball quite frequently on second down, especially second and long. Our favorite thing is to run some sort of zone read or shotgun draw on those second and 10 plays. And so, you know, teams get a good idea for our tendencies. So we're easy to predict. We do not typically do what the defense is giving us. We sort of do whatever we want. And these things don't work very well. So on top of that, if you factor in the concept of game theory, which is understanding what your opponent is doing and staying one step ahead of them, we're woefully inadequate there because that's not even a level that Doug Nussmeier thinks on. In fact, rarely ever do we see play calls that are factoring that in. We sort of just run whatever play we want. And that is massively detrimental, not only to the offensive line, but also to our offense's ability to score points. And so therefore, I remain just as adamant that Doug Nussmeier is a major problem with this team, and that it's very possible McElwain is as well. McElwain's track record as a quarterback guy and an offensive coordinator is not necessarily dissimilar from Nussmeier, where Nussmeier's always been surrounded with excellent programs and really excellent coaches, and McElwain has as well. It's at this point in time, I just know that our offensive coordinating is really bad. And I've been on this podcast multiple times post-game, and I've addressed that. And I've said, this is why we're losing. It's not the players. It's the coaching. And that is not a narrative that's going to change. I didn't snap judge that. I didn't make that just based upon the Michigan game. That's based on watching all of the games that these guys have coached together now, which is a pretty large sample size. And so I feel the same way. I don't see that changing unless Nussmeier all of a sudden becomes an expert in game theory and play calling, which is very, very unlikely given the nature of football coaches. So it's very likely that you're going to hear me on this podcast continue to analyze games and bring this up. I hope that's not the case, but the reason that I think you're going to hear it is because we're not going to fire Doug Nussmeier. And as long as Doug Nussmeier's here, I think you're going to continue to see more of the same. And hopefully this sort of brief background explanation on play calling gives you some sort of idea of the problems that we have. And as we get into the Tennessee game specifically on the second half of this show, we'll talk tactically about some play calls that would work based upon what Tennessee does and what could be done this week to improve our play calling. So we'll actually give you some actionable information on the topic of play calling. But for right now, the narrative for me is Doug Nussmeier's a problem. I feel exactly how I felt last week. And in fact, I'm sad that I have to go into another big football game with him as my offensive coordinator. We hope you've enjoyed this free preview of the Gator Nation Football Podcast. To listen to the rest of this episode, which includes an hour and 10 more minutes of content, head over to patreon.com/GatorNationFootballPodcast. Links to that page are posted on both our Twitter and Facebook account. Once on our Patreon page, you'll be able to sign up for $2 a month to get exclusive access to all of our content. Once you subscribe on Patreon, you're able to enjoy this podcast whenever you want, wherever you want, via your favorite podcasting app, whether you're on iOS, your computer, or Android. For more detailed information about the Gator Nation Football Podcast and Patreon, check out episode 0. If you have questions, comments, or feedback, as always, please reach out to us on either our Facebook or Twitter page. You can go to Facebook, Gator Nation Football Podcast, or on Twitter at Gator Nation FB.